Well, folks, I tried. I really did. I managed to squeeze out some genuine empathy for Orangina, and I thought I did a pretty good job. And then I made the mistake of looking at Elon's ex, and I remembered why the right is not compatible with empathy. And then I remembered Paul Pelosi getting hit over the head with a hammer and mocked by Schlumper and company. I remembered the image of bound, gagged, and hogtied Joe Biden that Schlumper tweeted to the world. I remembered the assassination threats against Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer, and how 1 in 6 election officials have experienced threats because of their job, ranging from death threats that named officials' young children to racist and gendered harassment by the right. I remembered MTG calling for the execution of Barack Obama and Paul Gosar posting an animated video depicting him unaliving AOC. I remembered the far right's violence against minority communities in Charleston, Pittsburgh, El Paso, Buffalo, Jacksonville, etc., etc., etc. I remembered Trump calling for people at his rallies to be harmed and how he wanted to shoot protesters in the legs. And of course, I remembered January 6th and how all our lawmakers' lives were in grave danger and our capital police were pummeled and traumatized for Trump's adrenaline rush of vengeance for a country that kicked him to the curb. I remembered E. Jean and dozens of women who faced violence at Trump's own hands. And then I caught wind of J.D. Vance and all the wannabe up Trump's ass peanut gallery who waited about 2.5 seconds before claiming that Joe Biden's campaign rhetoric led directly to President Trump's attempted assassination. And Representative Mike Collins going one step further, claiming Biden sent the orders. I remembered lock her up and knock the crap out of them and good people on both sides. And when the looting starts, the shooting starts and stand back and stand by. And I remembered that between 2013 and 2022, 75% of murders committed by extremists were caused by right-wing extremists, with only 4% caused by left-wing extremists. Of course, I don't advocate, celebrate, or condone violence. That's what the other side does. But I draw the line at feeling compassion for a man who we all know would be making a joke about the shooter having poor aim if this had happened to Joe Biden. Folks, I think we all know what's in store for us. We're going to see the biggest misuse of martyrdom there ever was. We're going to see mediocre men marinating in victimhood, tossing out thinly veiled calls for retribution and dog whistle after dog whistle for MAGA minions to avenge the radical left. Joe Biden will be painted as a cunning force of evil, at least when he can remember where he is and when to take his Alzheimer's meds. It's gonna be torture. Absolute frickin' torture. And instead of talking about the corroborated testimony of young girls who were allegedly violated at the hands of the depraved sociopath who happens to be the Republican nominee, we're gonna hear about a cult leader victim who bravely gave the tip of his ear to save racism everywhere. Yeah. Well, all I can say is I'm going to be sure to remember all the folks who feared for their safety because of Orangina Pervilicious Felonious Schlumper McPhee's thin-skinned rhetoric over the years. And I'm going to remind the bad actors that malevolent men don't get to turn victimhood into victory.
Yeah. What she said. I'm with her.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling there's something. I'm scared in case I fall off my chair, and I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right, here I am stuck in the middle with you.
Hey, yep. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is the Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA. Also in California, in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN. Up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's KSO, and Eugene's KEPW. Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe every day on the internet on the Progressive Voices channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, and most of your favorite podcast sites. Blanketing Planet Earth. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, and all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today. That was, by the way, at the top of the show in our opening quote there, TikToker Dana inspired with that excellent rant. And I think it was excellent, right on the money.
Yeah, she did a great job with that.
Thanks to, hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
That, of course, thanks to bradblog.com commenter Rick H., who tipped me off to it after we had temporarily postponed our usual Sunday Tunes, our weekly collection of the week's best political cartoons that we've run every Sunday for years at the Brad Blog. I think this might have been the only time that we have ever actually postponed them, following the assassination attempt on Saturday on Donald Trump. Now, Rick H. noted in his comment, along with the link to that video, in his comment on Sunday night, he said, quote, time's up, back to business.
Okay.
Well, good point. Republicans and the Republican National Committee, they did not delay anything at all when it came to their convention following the near-miss assassination attempt on Donald Trump, even as the Biden-Harris campaign had paused their own campaigning indefinitely, at least for now. But with that cue from Trump himself, who said nothing should change, we should go straight ahead with our plans, well, we went ahead and ran our Sunday Tunes on Monday. Yep, time's up, back to business. And in fact, on Monday night, Donald Trump made his triumphant and, yes, arguably emotional appearance on the first night of the Republican National Convention in Milwaukee, in the battleground state of Wisconsin, in a city that Donald Trump had recently described as, quote, horrible. That after the attempt on his life over the weekend during a rally in Pennsylvania, where the 20-year-old registered Republican assailant was killed by Secret Service, if not before very nearly missing the head of the former president and killing a rally attendee and critically injuring two others for reasons that we still do not know today. But with a bandaged ear, Trump appeared to a roaring reception on Monday in Milwaukee just after naming Ohio's 39-year-old first-term U.S. Senator J.D. Vance, once a virulent Trump critic, who once described him as, quote, America's Hitler, but who has since become a full-on MAGA toady, naming him as his vice presidential candidate. As I noted yesterday, Vance described himself as, quote, a never-Trump guy some years ago. He said, quote, he never liked him. Speaking of Donald Trump, that he, quote, can't stomach Trump, that he thinks he's, quote, noxious, quote, reprehensible, and, quote, an idiot, and, quote, leading the white working class to a very dark place. Wow. I could have been named Trump's vice president. I guess Donald Trump dodged that bullet, too. Anyway, we will have more on Vance's positions. Not position, but positions on our climate crisis.
Yes, his ever-changing positions.
In Desi's Green News Report coming up a little bit later, where, yeah, he's flip-flopped as well over the years. And more on this week's Republican convention on our next show, I suspect, after a pretty weird opening day to the RNC. And I don't suspect it's going to get any less weird as the week wears on in advance of Trump's Thursday night acceptance speech as the 34-time criminally convicted former president officially becomes the Republicans' 2024 standard bearer once again. And yes, of course, now their cult leader. Of course, as you know, Donald Trump has only been convicted on 34 counts related to paying off a porn star to cheat in order to win the 2016 election because Joe Biden has weaponized his Justice Department to go after Trump and other Republicans. Never mind that the that particular investigation began when Donald Trump was still in office before Joe Biden had even announced he would be running for president.
Oops.
But just a few short weeks after a special counsel named by the Department of Justice successfully won a conviction against President Biden's own son, Hunter Biden, Joe Biden and the Democrats and their supposed weaponization of the Department of Justice against Trump and Republicans that you've heard so much about for the past several years. Well, apparently that weaponization against Republicans continues with yet another conviction of, yes, yet another Democrat. U.S. Senator Bob Menendez was convicted on Tuesday of all the counts that he faced at his corruption trial, including accepting bribes of gold and cash from three New Jersey businessmen and acting as a foreign agent for the Egyptian government. The jury's unanimous verdict came after a 9-week trial in which prosecutors said the Democrat abused the power of his office to protect allies from criminal investigations and enrich associates, including his wife, through acts that included meeting with Egyptian intelligence officials and helping that country access millions of dollars in U.S. military aid. The 70-year-old three-term Senator Menendez did not testify at the trial, but he insisted publicly that he was only doing his job as the chairman, the powerful chairman of the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He said the gold bars that were found in his New Jersey home by the FBI, well, they belonged to his wife, Nadine, who was also charged, but her trial was postponed so that she could recover from breast cancer surgery. She has pleaded not guilty. The verdict, delivered at a federal courthouse in Manhattan, comes just 4 months before Election Day and would seem, at least, to doom Menendez's chances of campaigning for re-election as an independent candidate. Apparently, if you're a Republican, it's just fine to campaign for office. But if you're a Democrat, or at least in this case, now a former Democrat, he's previously vowed that he was going to run as an independent no matter what the jury came back with. We'll see if that stays. Meanwhile, Congressman Andy Kim has won the Democratic nomination in New Jersey for Menendez's Senate seat. He will be running as the presumptive favorite in the heavily Democratic-leaning state of New Jersey this November against Republican Curtis Bashaw and a number of other third-party contestants, including, yes, Menendez, if his name is still on the ballot by that time. Immediately after the verdict, both Democratic Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and New Jersey's Democratic Governor Phil Murphy called on Menendez to resign. Said Schumer in a statement, quote, "In light of this guilty verdict, Senator Menendez must now do what is right for his constituents, the Senate, and our country, and resign." Menendez has the dubious distinction, it should be noted, of being the only U.S. senator indicted twice.
Well, there you go.
That's pretty good, right?
Quite a record.
Not, he's not yet up there with Donald Trump, who's been indicted 4 times, but, you know, Democrats are doing their best. This latest trial was the second time that the New Jersey Democrat faced corruption allegations, an earlier prosecution on unrelated corruption charges back in 2017, ended with a deadlocked jury, leaving Menendez serving his state and apparently Egypt in the U.S. Senate ever since. In that case, which was originally indicted by President Obama's Justice Department back in 2015, he was charged with letting a wealthy Florida eye doctor buy his influence through luxury vacations and campaign contributions. Well, I guess he should have been a Republican Supreme Court justice instead. That sort of thing is apparently allowed. Even encouraged, it seems. After a jury could not reach a unanimous verdict in that case back in 2017, however, New Jersey federal prosecutors during the Trump administration dropped that case rather than put him on trial once again. Joe Biden's Justice Department filed the new charges because, you know, they've been weaponized to go after Republicans like the Democrat, Bob Menendez, and like Joe Biden's own son, Hunter.
And Representative Cuellar
down in Texas. Yes, those Democratic Republicans. Menendez's co-defendants here, these two New Jersey businessmen, they were convicted of the charges that they faced as well. All three had pleaded not guilty. Another businessman pleaded guilty before trial and testified against Menendez and the other defendants. As to that conviction a few weeks ago against Hunter Biden, a Trump appointee federal judge in Florida on Monday called for that conviction to be tossed out after finding that the special counsel tapped by Joe Biden's Attorney General Merrick Garland to investigate Hunter Biden was actually unconstitutionally appointed to the role and that the entire case must now be dismissed. Oops, I'm sorry. I was wrong about that. She didn't actually say that Hunter Biden's case should be dismissed, but she did say, and in fact, she did dismiss the 40 criminal felony counts that were filed against the man who just happened to appoint her to her own lifetime job as a federal judge. That would be Donald J. Trump. His case was dismissed on Monday by U.S. District Judge Aileen Cannon because Special Counsel Jack Smith, appointed by Merrick Garland as an independent prosecutor after Donald Trump declared his intention to run for president back in 2022 in order to avoid even the appearance of conflict of interest. Well, apparently Jack Smith was appointed in violation of the Constitution or the law or something, as Aileen Cannon ruled in her 93-page order, defying court after court, including appeals court and even the U.S. Supreme Court, in past rulings, who had determined that there was nothing at all unconstitutional about appointing an independent special prosecutor to oversee certain cases where the DOJ wished to avoid apparent conflicts of interest with the current administration. For the moment, Hunter Biden is, in fact, still facing his conviction and facing sentencing in a gun-related charge where he's accused of lying about his drug use on a background check form that has been brought against pretty much nobody in the nation in American history other than Hunter Biden, at least unless that charge has been coupled with another charge, some sort of illegal use of that weapon, which didn't happen here. In this case, Hunter owned that weapon for 11 days. He never even loaded it before his girlfriend threw it away. Hunter Biden, nonetheless, is still facing sentencing after charges brought by a special counsel. Donald Trump, the luckiest man in the world, arguably, on the other hand, saw his case dismissed in full on Monday by the corrupt judge that he himself appointed, who claimed that special counsel appointments like Jack Smith by the DOJ, well, those are unconstitutional, at least when it comes to Donald Trump, apparently, if not others, like Hunter Biden. Never mind those 60 or so years of people prosecuted and convicted successfully by special counsels and special prosecutors appointed by the Attorney General. Never mind all of the court rulings, including by the U.S. Supreme Court itself, that such appointments were perfectly constitutional. Judge Aileen Cannon, she knows better when it comes to special counsels because, well, she's better than all of those other dumb courts and dumb judges who have years more experience than her. So what was the actual basis for this ruling, dismissing the stolen documents case in full, 40 criminal counts against Donald Trump? And can Special Counsel Jack Smith put Humpty Dumpty back together in the appeals court? And by the way, what about that child rapist that was also recently jailed thanks to an apparently unconstitutionally appointed special counsel? Well, my next guess says that apparently he's going to have to be freed as well, at least if Cannon's special counsel ruling holds up. Keith Barber joins us next on the broadcast to discuss all of the above with the Green News Report to follow. All of that is straight ahead on the broadcast. I'm Brad Friedman.
The Bradcast and the Green News Report are 100% independent, 100% listener supported. But we can't do it alone. We need you. Please help us bring real facts to listeners at independent stations around the nation. Please drop by bradblog.com/donate. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
I'm special. I got half some of your attention. Give it to me.
Yeah, well, maybe Special Counsel Jack Smith isn't so special after all. Or maybe he's a bit too special, at least if you believe Donald Trump's hand-picked federal judge overseeing his stolen documents case down in Florida. Welcome back to the Bradcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. As Daily Kos's legal contributor Keith Barber wrote on Monday, quote, "It is said that no good deed goes unpunished. Seeking to avoid the appearance of Biden's own appointees investigating his political rival, U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland appointed Special Prosecutor Jack Smith to independently investigate Donald Trump's potential crimes. Smith would eventually bring charges in the District of Columbia related to Trump's inciting the January 6th insurrection and, frankly, and stunningly, in my words, not Keith, charges brought in South Florida for stealing and hiding highly classified national security documents in Mar-a-Lago, lying about having them, and tampering with witnesses to conceal his crimes. Yes, after more than a year of the government attempting to retrieve the stolen documents from Trump as the former president hid the documents and moved the documents, lied to his own attorneys about which documents he had, and allegedly ordered Mar-a-Lago staffers to delete security camera footage in order to hide his movement of the documents, Trump was eventually charged in a 40-count indictment by the special counsel on charges related to the Espionage Act and obstruction. That, along with two co-conspirators who helped him hide the documents and conceal the evidence of their crimes. The judge in South Florida, Aileen Cannon, was appointed to that position by the defendant, Donald Trump. From the beginning, Barber, a former Republican, notes she acted to protect Trump, and the United States Court of Appeals for the 11th Circuit has already ruled once that she abused her discretion in favor of the defendant who gave her this job. On Monday, Barber charges she abused that discretion again, and even worse, he says, she dismissed the classified documents case in full, claiming that Jack Smith's entire appointment and every penny spent on the investigation are, in fact, illegitimate and somehow unconstitutional, I guess. To do so, Barber argues, she ignored plain statutory text, deciding for herself that Congress didn't mean to do what the words in the law plainly says that Congress did. She dismissed the directly on-point words of a unanimous Supreme Court decision as mere, quote, stray language that can simply be ignored. She did all of that while treating concurring and even dissenting opinions by Justice Scalia and Justice Thomas in wholly unrelated cases that did not even consider the issue. Well, she considered that, nonetheless, to be persuasive. So what actually happened here? And how will it affect not just Donald Trump's case, but a whole host of other cases successfully brought by special prosecutors and special counsels over the past almost 60 years, including most recently cases successfully brought and convictions won by DOJ-appointed special counsels against Joe Biden's son and even a Republican pedophile, who, if Judge Cannon's 93-page contrarian ruling is actually upheld, well, it seems that pedophile would now have to be freed, according to Barber, because those convictions are essentially unconstitutional, just as the corrupted U.S. Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas suggested in his solo concurring opinion in the unrelated presidential immunity ruling about 3 weeks ago. Jack Smith has already said he plans to appeal Cannon's decision, but how the hell Will the stolen documents case against the former president move forward from here, at least in the event that Donald Trump doesn't become president again, at which time he's already vowed to order the cases against him, along with all of the federal cases, to simply be ended, because that's how corrupt authoritarian rulers roll. Joining us now for insight and explanation on all of these questions is our friend and of late frequent legal contributor to the broadcast, former lifelong Republican and attorney who now writes at Daily Coasts under the pen name Keith DB on legal and constitutional issues, Mr. Keith Barber. Welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Well, thank you, Brad. Good to be back.
Okay, so your coverage of what happened in Aileen Cannon's ruling was actually, I found it to be very helpful. If I can summarize it here as tightly as possible, you cite Article 2, Section 2, Clause 2 of the U.S. Constitution, which empowers presidents to appoint certain officers to certain roles, like ambassadors and judges, with the, quote, advice and consent of the U.S. Senate, and that, quote, Congress may, by law, vest the appointments of such inferior officers as they think proper in the president alone, in the courts of law, or in the heads of departments. In other words, as Congress decides by statute, heads of departments like the attorney general may appoint a special counsel, as several federal statutes approved by Congress specifically empower the AG to do just that, as they see fit, to, quote, conduct any kind of legal proceedings, civil or criminal, such much as, quote, U.S. attorneys are authorized by law to conduct. There are other federal statutes which also grant those powers to the attorney general as well, as you cite. So what is it that Aileen Cannon is talking about here when she argues that the current statutes do not actually empower an attorney general to appoint a special counsel to bring prosecutions against Donald Trump, much less others who we'll get to in a moment? What's she talking about?
That's a real good question. That was my point, is I don't know what she's talking about. I mean, she does things like saying that the word retained in the statute doesn't mean the ability to appoint. So, you know, and it's that kind of parsing of words that, you know, and real splitting of hairs that she made in order to get to where she wanted to go. And, you know, when you see that kind of parsing of words come from a judge, you that's a real warning signal that they're doing that to get to the result that they've already decided they wanted. And that's what happened here. She just wanted to dismiss the case because, you know, her buddy Trump appointed her and gave her that job, and it was time to return the favor, and so she has.
Well, I mean, obviously she didn't write that in her ruling. I mean, what she seems to be arguing, and actually what the defense team, Trump's team, seem to be arguing, is that Jack Smith is not an inferior officer, that nobody is overseeing him, the AG is not overseeing him, and so forth. Therefore, he's not an inferior officer who could be appointed by the attorney general, but rather a superior officer who must be Senate confirmed, and he's not Senate confirmed. Now, the Department of Justice has already said that's not true. Attorney General Merrick Garland oversees whatever the special counsel does. We saw this Bill Barr, Donald Trump's special counsel, do that, oversee the final result, for example, of the Robert Mueller ruling. But, I mean, it seems that she is arguing that a special counsel can be appointed. They just must be confirmed by the Senate first. I mean, is that sort of the layman's version of what she seems to be arguing here?
Sort of. And she did argue that inferior officer versus greater officer thing. But in the end, when it finally got to the end of that whole section, she kind of weaseled around it and said, you know, while a whole lot of factors weigh in favor of viewing this special counsel, Jack Smith, as, you know, a superior official who requires, you know, Senate consent, I'm not actually going to go as quite as far as saying that that's the basis for my ruling. And you know, and it went back again to that statutory text, which she says just does not allow for the appointment of special counsels unless they have been vetted by the Senate, because she is indeed saying that, for example, an attorney general who is given special prosecutor status, like, for example, Weiss with Hunter Biden, because he was already an attorney general in Delaware.
Uh-huh.
And he just got the additional hat, if you will, of special counsel, which allowed him to bring charges not just in Delaware, but also California. She's saying he's okay because he did go through the Senate.
So that one was okay because he was
a lesser officer.
Yeah, so that one was okay because he was approved by the Senate, albeit as a U.S. attorney, not as a special counsel. But
That's true.
He was approved by the U.S. Senate. That one's okay. But the guy, I forget, Robert Herr, who was the special counsel appointed to investigate Joe Biden himself and his issues with classified documents, that would have been unconstitutional under Aileen Cannon's ruling, if I'm reading it correctly.
I believe that's correct. She once again weasels and says that her ruling is applicable only to this case. Well, you know, that's kind of always true. But certainly if one was to apply her reasoning, then Robert Herr and his appointment was completely illegitimate, and his entire investigation that the MAGAs think, you know, concluded something wonderful for them. It really didn't, but they believed that. Then his entire investigation was also illegitimate.
And that's not the only one under this special counsel statute I'll get to in a moment. But the appointment of special counsels has been challenged like this by my reading many times before, both recently and, yes, going back some 60 years, when no less than the U.S. Supreme Court, as you note, ruled unanimously that, in fact, special counsels or special prosecutors, as they were described back then, were perfectly legal and constitutional. So I think her ruling is so far the only one, after this being reviewed in court after court, that has found the way that she found. Everyone, including a unanimous Supreme Court, found otherwise.
Yeah, that was the case of United States v. Nixon, a very important and seminal case. And its language quite directly endorsed the notion of special counsels. And Cannon couldn't get around the fact that the language did. She just said that the Supreme Court made that statement in mere dicta. She called it stray language. And she said that the Supreme Court said that without actually considering the issue. She put it as the Supreme Court decided that without considering it, which is an amazing thing to say, but that is indeed what she did. And she borrowed that, by the way, from Justice Thomas's concurrence in the immunity case. He said the same thing. And, you know, and he was the only one of nine judges on the Supreme Court to say that, for starters. But she thought that concurrence was persuasive, while the unanimous decision of the Supreme Court that's, you know, held up for 50 years now, it was back in 1974, she didn't view it persuasive at all. She didn't view two United States Court of Appeals decisions that cited that Supreme Court case as, you know, endorsing special counsels and the appointment of special counsels by the attorney general as persuasive either. She said that, well, they're out of my circuit, and all they did was, you know, quote the Supreme Court's language that was just dicta,
by which she rejects. So she rejects the unanimous Supreme Court ruling. She accepts the solo concurring opinion issued by Clarence Thomas that was signed by him and no one else. I need to underscore that. Not even Sam Alito, the corrupt Sam Alito, pro-insurrectionist Sam Alito would go along with Clarence Thomas on that, apparently. And yet, despite Supreme Courts and appellate courts all saying, no, the special counsel is perfectly fine, she decides, as a low-level U.S. district court judge, I think she's in her 30s, she was just appointed about 5 minutes ago to the role, that her ruling supersedes all of those others. Am I understanding this correctly?
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, a lot of people have gone to jail as a result of special counsels appointed by the attorney general.
Yep.
And, you know, none of them got the benefit of a rogue judge saying, nope, all of that's not valid. And if the Republicans and the MAGAs like to talk about this notion of two-tier justice and how unfair it's been to Trump. Well, nobody challenged or no court accepted the notion, that special counsels weren't authorized by statute and weren't something attorney generals could do until it came to Trump.
Yeah.
And that is what two-tier justice looks like.
Indeed it does. Let's go through just a couple. In a separate article that you also filed on Monday, you shared some of your research into some of these other special prosecutors and special counsel who were all private individuals. They were not Senate confirmed throughout recent decades. I'll point folks to your full article, of course, for the details about all of these different special counsels appointed in this exact same manner. But what did you find of note from your research? And at least three of them caught my eye here. But what caught your eye?
Well, I can guess that, you know, poor Michael Cohen went to jail for 3 years as a result of the Robert Mueller investigation.
Yeah.
And the MAGAs celebrated that.
Mm-hmm.
And if Judge Cannon is right, then he spent 3 years in jail that he shouldn't have spent in jail.
Mm-hmm.
Another person that Mueller's investigation caught in its net that most people don't realize was part of the Mueller investigation, but it was an individual by the name of George Nader, who was working in the Trump administration. And Mueller seized Nader's cell phone, and on it he found kiddie porn and evidence that George Nader raped little boys, brought a little boy into this country to be raped. In fact, that evidence was found on his cell phone, and he is currently in prison on a 10-year sentence for just that. And if Judge Cannon's decision is correct, the seizure of that cell phone was unconstitutional, and the little boy raper should be let free.
I mean, that's what would happen here if her ruling is upheld. I guess it would have to either be upheld by the 11th Circuit, well, eventually by the U.S. Supreme Court. If it's upheld, is that how this works? We sort of go back to all of the cases that were decided under.
Yeah. In fact, any competent counsel for George Nader should right now be filing a motion to have his guilty verdict reversed. And freed from prison, particularly while that's pending.
And you can go back even much further here. Nixon's White House attorney, John Dean, he cooperated with special prosecutor Archibald Cox in the Watergate matter, and he served time after pleading guilty in that matter. Was his 1 to 4 year prison sentence also unconstitutional if Judge Aileen Cannon is right here in her ruling in Trump's document case?
Yes. Yes, it absolutely certainly seems to be that way.
All right.
Dean was wrongly convicted under the auspices of a prosecutor who was working as a law professor when appointed as special counsel.
Under special prosecutor Leon Jaworski, Richard Nixon was forced to produce his secret White House tape recordings, and then he resigned from office once those were being released to prosecutors because they were so devastating. Was that completely unnecessary for Nixon to resign if, in fact, Judge Cannon's Monday ruling is correct on this?
Yes. Leon Jaworski was, summoned to the task after the Saturday night massacre of special counsel while he was working in the law firm of Fulbright and Jaworski, still a big name firm, I think. And the same reasoning would apply to him in that case. His subpoena to get information from you know, Richard Nixon's office should have been quashed because, you know, he had no right as a special prosecutor to ask for anything.
Now, on a side note here, Keith Barber, because I don't think we've spoken on air since the SCOTUS ruling on this, but given the fact that the Supremes decided about three weeks ago in their final ruling of the term that presidents have absolute immunity for crimes committed while carrying out official acts in office and presumptive immunity for pretty much everything else, and they can't even have evidence from official acts used against them for prosecution of other crimes that they may be tried for while serving in office. As long as you're talking about Watergate, isn't there reason to believe that if this Supreme Court's ruling on that in Trump v. U.S. had been in place during U.S. v. Nixon, that Nixon would have never even faced potential prosecution for his involvement in any of the Watergate crimes?
Yeah, that's true. Nixon could have simply said, I was acting within my official capacities or within the outer boundaries, the outer limits of what a president does. And therefore, it's either presumptively immune, or if it's within the core presidential powers, absolute immunity is granted. And even core presidential powers, as defined by the court in the immunity decision, is ridiculously broad and absurd.
Well, it also allows, even if a case was brought against him for the, you know, the outer bounds of his behavior as president, or even his behavior as a, if they considered it to be as a private individual, they would not have been able to get testimony from people like John Dean or anyone else, because
that's correct. That evidence would have been off limits,
which even Amy Coney Barrett drew a line at in that ruling, as I understand it, 3 weeks ago, saying, well, that's ridiculous. The fact that you can't even get evidence from, you know, as part of official acts. One more here. Well, at least one. Bill Clinton would have never faced Ken Starr's years-long probe and the finding of civil contempt under Judge Cannon's ruling if that had been in place back in the 90s, correct?
A little bit more difficult. His conduct was prior to his being, well, not all of the conduct was prior to his being president, and certainly the,
well, no, I'm not talking about the presidential immunity case now. I'm going back to Eileen Cannon saying Ken Starr could have never been appointed to that role, right?
Yeah, Ken Starr was clearly not capable of doing that job when he was appointed to it, according to Eileen Cannon's ruling. There's no question about that.
So your article on her ruling concludes simply, this is a judge reasoning backwards from her desired conclusion through and around the law. This is judicial activism. This is a corrupt judge rewarding a defendant who gave her the job. Okay, so Jack Smith has now vowed to appeal this ruling. What should we expect from the very conservative 11th Circuit Court of Appeals, and presumably from our corrupted U.S. Supreme Court when the case eventually reaches them?
Yeah, and I've obviously gotten bad at predicting these things, because I said the United States Supreme Court would never even take that ridiculous, absurd immunity case.
Yep.
And then look what happened.
You and everyone else said that.
Yeah. The 11th Circuit is pretty conservative, but they have already slapped this judge down once with three conservative judges doing it. So we'll see. I think the 11th Circuit will likely rule in favor of Smith. And, you know, once again, I would kind of like to say, oh, well, the Supreme Court will never take this. This is an obvious case, and we decided it 50 years ago. But with this court, I can't say that sort of thing in confidence anymore. They don't do things anymore based upon what's legally right.
No, and they come up with rulings like in Bush v. Gore, you know, even back then, and now again on the presidential immunity. Oh, it only applies to this case only. They can do that when they want, when they feel like it. So, yeah, it makes no sense to predict what this Supreme Court, this corrupted Supreme Court, will do. But on a legal basis, if canon is overruled by the 11th Circuit. Is this enough, at least legally, to move that this corrupt judge canon finally be removed from this case entirely? I realize the 11th Circuit would have to overturn canon's ruling on the special counsel matter. And would this be an appropriate time for Jack Smith to say she must be overruled, and by the way, she must be removed from this case?
I think so, and I think that that will be the real interesting thing to look for when Smith files his appeal. If Smith also states that the relief that he's seeking should include recusal of Judge Cannon, because, you know, we're asking the 11th Circuit to do this because it should be obvious to everyone by now that this judge is simply not going to give the prosecution a fair shake. Of course, all of this will be moot if Trump wins in November.
Thank you for underscoring that point, Keith. I wasn't having a bad enough day. Keith Barber is the legal and constitutional contributor over at DailyCoast.com, where he writes as Keith DB. And you can also find him on the Twitters at KeithDB80. Thanks, Keith. We'll be talking again too soon, I suspect.
Thanks, Brad. It's been fun.
Thank you, sir. Okay. He's got a fun, a strange idea of fun, doesn't he?
Well, he's a lawyer, so what do you expect?
There you go. And a former Republican lawyer.
Yes, indeed.
Fact.
Now, you know, some things that he brought up about how Trump appointed Judge Cannon and how she is basically returning the favor. Some folks I have seen say, hey, this is her application to be appointed to the U.S. Supreme Court.
Yeah, she's auditioning. I think she's perfectly placed right now to, you know, if Donald Trump wins again. You know, Clarence Thomas and Sam Alito are both going to retire.
Yep.
And they could put in Aileen Cannon would look beautiful in Clarence Thomas's well-worn seat.
And she would be there for some 30, 40 years because she's so young.
She's like in her 30s still.
Yeah, exactly. Now, and some other things that I've been pondering about this is that this appointment of Judge Cannon is among all of the Trump judiciary appointments and the plans for Schedule F, which is in Project 2025, which is where the Heritage Foundation is planning for Trump to staff his entire administration if he is
reelected. He's going to use Schedule F to fire some 50,000
civil service
employees in federal agencies and replace them with Trump stooges.
Toadies.
Trump loyalists. Yes.
Yeah. And so that's the corruption model. So, you know, it's your template for appointments to the judiciary and the executive branch. You appoint corrupt toadies who will facilitate corruption and abuse of power, regardless of precedent, regardless of scientific data, and, you know, just completely regardless of basic common sense.
Correct.
I mean, so appointing these toadies opens up the door to escalating levels of corruption and self-dealing.
Well, yes.
And politicization of government agencies. And this is the Russian model.
That's
where you give parts of your government away to oligarchs. They take over sectors of the economy and privatize it. And your corrupt judiciary then helps them to exercise that lawlessness and punish their opponents.
There was this quaint idea that, you know, we all used to have in this country that the best ideas would win. We would debate, we'd have it out in elections, and that the best ideas for policy would win out. That is what happened. The problem was the most popular policies are the progressive policies, not the so-called conservative ones, the right-wing ones. So
that's why they have to rig everything.
What they have discovered is they can't win at the ballot box. What they've got to do is capture the government and basically replace it, wrench it into their will.
Yep.
Because the American people just don't want it. So they got to come up with all these extraordinary ways to cheat and to, you know, actually win by a form of political violence in this case.
Anyway, so this is all
because
nuts
Keith didn't cheer me up enough. You felt like you needed to ring in. I understand.
Yes, you're welcome.
I appreciate that. And to further cheer me up, let's take a quick break and we'll come back with Desi Doyen's latest Green News Report. Following this short break, where I will throw myself out a window. I'm Brad Friedman. You're listening to the Bradcast. Don't touch that dial. Hey, this is Brad. My thanks to those of you who stopped by bradblog.com/donate to help Desi Doyen and I stay on your public airwaves. You're the only one that keeps us here. Thank you. Meanwhile, while it's all fun and games at the RNC this week, down in Texas, there are still hundreds of thousands of people struggling, dealing with sweltering heat.
Yep.
In the wake of Hurricane Beryl. But I guess that doesn't matter, does it?
No, of course it doesn't.
Not for our Republican Party. Nope. That's just the way things go, as discussed in our latest Green News Report.
Houston, we have a problem.
Texas electric grid infrastructure buckles under multiple extreme weather disasters. Damages from Hurricane Beryl estimated at nearly $3 billion, plus...
I don't think there is a climate crisis, J.D.
No, I don't think there is either.
Republican vice presidential nominee Senator J.D. Vance was for climate action before he was against it.
All of that flip-floppery and more straight ahead from BradBlog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
President Trump, will you take any action as president to slow the climate crisis?
So I want absolutely immaculate clean water, and I want absolutely clean air.
Okay, we'll take that as a no. This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, climate change denier Donald Trump has chosen, surprise, a climate change denier as vice president?
Yes, are you shocked?
I am shocked.
As we go to air, the Republican National Convention is underway in Milwaukee, Wisconsin this week, at the same time as most Americans are grappling with record-breaking levels of heat this summer and a rising death toll from extreme weather fueled by man-made climate change and the burning of fossil fuels. A recent Pew Research poll found that 65% of Americans want the government to prioritize action on global warming and focus on developing more renewable energy rather than fossil fuels. But at the RNC, climate change is not a problem costing Americans dearly right now. Instead, the Republicans' agenda calls for expanding development of polluting oil, gas, and coal that drive climate change, along with dismantling federal agencies that enforce pollution laws and repealing U.S. climate policies.
That sounds like my Republicans.
On Monday, Donald Trump announced Ohio Republican Senator J.D. Vance as his vice presidential running mate. In 2020, Vance mostly accepted climate science and supported renewable energy.
Of course, have a climate problem in our society, one largely caused now by unrestrained emissions in China.
Okay, well, it's not only unrestrained emissions in China, but I take his point. At least he's not insane on this point.
Right. But in 2022, Vance flip-flopped to get Trump's endorsement in his Senate race, saying climate change is not a threat.
I'm skeptical of the idea that climate change is caused purely by man. And that's basically the argument that they're making. It's been changing, as others pointed out, it's been changing for millennia.
Ah, that old chestnut. It's been changing for millennia. No explanation for why it's changed so quickly in the past, oh, I don't know, 50 or 70 years, but it's always changing. There's nothing we can really do about it.
Yes, and now Vance supports massive expansion of oil and gas extraction and repealing emission standards, and he also opposes wind and solar power and electric vehicles.
There you go. You're hired.
In related news, a dangerous, long-lasting heat wave is still broiling 130 million Americans in the east and southeast with temperatures above 100 degrees Fahrenheit. The sweltering heat is especially dangerous for folks in Houston, Texas. As we go to air, around 500,000 people in the region are still without electricity more than a week after Category 1 storm Hurricane Beryl destroyed transmission lines. It was Houston's third third weather-related blackout this year alone. Texas state Republican leaders say they will investigate why power company CenterPoint failed to keep the lights on and why it is taking so long for repairs. But Texas energy expert Doug Lewin says that the Republican-controlled state legislature, rather than boosting funding to harden the state's electric grid, instead poured billions of taxpayer dollars into building new natural gas-fired power plants, which are useless when power lines are down. Lewin says $1 billion in funding was set aside for solar and battery microgrids for critical infrastructure.
Well, that's good.
But that is still sitting dormant, unused, and inaccessible.
But the money has gone out to build those new natural gas power plants.
Exactly.
Go figure.
Preliminary estimates set Hurricane Beryl's damage at nearly $3 billion in insured losses in the U.S. alone. The cost of repeat weather disasters underscores that our 20th century infrastructure was not designed for 21st century supercharged extreme weather. Here's climate scientist Dr. Michael Mann on MSNBC.
And we're seeing loss of life. We're seeing massive loss of property. This storm is going to cost us billions of dollars. And we hear from the critics, well, it's going to be too expensive to do something about climate change. No, it's too expensive not to do something about climate change.
Yeah, wouldn't it have been fun to put that $3 billion that has just been lost in Houston instead into upgrading the system?
Yep.
Crazy idea, I know. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Still crazy after all these years.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, still crazy after all these
crazy
years.
Ideas, you know, burying the power lines so they don't blow down every time a storm rolls in.
Yeah, which costs you way, way, way more in the multiple blackouts that you have over decades than it would have just costed to go ahead and bury them in the first place, which is why places like Sweden and Germany don't have big blackouts like the United States has routinely.
Crazy. Crazy.
Crazy ideas. You know, investing in clean energy and investing in resilient infrastructure.
All right. Here's a crazy idea. Yeah. I got to get out. My thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen, all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's program or any other we have ever done, you can download it anytime for free, no paywall, at bradblog.com. That is made possible by those of you who hit one of those donate buttons or go straight to bradblog.com/donate. I have heard from just a few more of you of late with donations. That is greatly appreciated. What's particularly appreciated is if you consider a monthly, automated monthly donation of any amount you can afford to help keep us going throughout this totally fun election year. All right, drop me an email. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com. On the Facebooks, Mastodons, and site still known as Twitter, I am The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world.
But I would not be convicted by jury of my peers. Still crazy.